Okay, this is side, or this rather is tape two, side one, side A. I'm with Yui Zhang. We were talking about your schooling, and I think we had gotten up to 1971.
Right.
You just left, I think, middle school. And
right.
Your mother was wondering where you should go from there.
So that was one of a critical point in my life. So that would really get lost, what I would can do. So young and going anywhere. So one day was really, it's not entirely by accident, but if that didn't happen, I don't know what could happen. Is that my mother encountered one of people, and she knew the time, who just came back from meeting in Nanchang City,
mm-hmm.
where the headquarters of the university is located. Remember this farm hosting a department for veterinary medicine. But that department actually belongs to this Jiangxi Agricultural University. The university itself is not in that farm. The university itself is about 100 kilometers away from the department
right.
in the Nanchang city. And so that's a very funny arrangement, because they argue that to run a department of veterinary medicine, you can't have in the city. So you have to go to the farm or the countryside so you can really see those animals.
Mm-hmm.
So the farm has a connection with the headquarters in Nanchang City, of the university headquarters. Okay. So once in a while, the people going back and the forth for meetings or business. So one day, my mother encountered a person who just came back a meeting from university. And he mentioned to my mother that the things stopped coming down a bit, that university is now considered to reopen the high school, because I was not alone, apparently. There's so many kids just finished the middle school,
mm-hmm.
and that they're about 13, 14, 15 years old, and nowhere to go. And they were thinking about either they now go to countryside and to start farming, and they could do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So they think about reopen the high school. And so my mother heard this, and they immediately, she asked, if not begging, for this person, who actually was in somewhat management the position, in the farm we lived on, and asking him for the help, whether he could help me to go to high school if really reopened. And then that person said, "Well, yeah, I'll be going to the meeting again next month at the university. I will look into this." Okay. Because he was the director running the farm at the time, actually. Yeah. Was not a very close friend, but he himself is the intellectual. And he appreciated, to get education is important. He also realized how young I was, mm-hmm. how little, actually. And I just can't do the work in the field. So he said he will look into this one next time he go to meeting. He went to meeting, come back again, and in 2 weeks, tell my mother that he talked to the high school, the principal or the president, and they said that so they would take me into the high school, and if I can go there and somehow make a living there, because that means I have to live outside my family, and there is another almost like boarding school, because that was like 60 miles away, so mm-hmm. I can't come home until summer vacations.
Oh, yeah.
And he asking, is your son too young to live there? My mother, no problem, I sent him over. And so my mother just took me with her and went to the school. And they just dropped me there, and they brought all the clothes and a little bit of money, enough to go to the cafeteria. It was not really a cafeteria, it's like a dining room.
Mm-hmm.
Without that, I don't think I would be sitting here.
No, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, I would just like, and the girl I was mentioning, just go to countryside just like one else.
Right.
But the middle school education I received, and that was virtually nothing compared what I already learned in the elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
So even though technically or formally I graduated from middle school, but education-wise, it's just like
I graduated from
the elementary school.
Right.
Right. So that made a huge difference, and I was able to go to high school. That's only the beginning. the part is that was back to 1971 or 1972. Okay. And this guy Deng Xiaoping, mm-hmm. you probably know his name, right?
Right.
So he was allowed to come back and to govern the country again. And that was the second time he was being stripped out of his job. So when he came back, and the country was so chaotic. That was and the year after this guy called Lin Biao.
Oh yeah.
And he fled to Mongolia and died over there. Was trying to run away from the prosecution by Mao Zedong.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was designated a success for Mao Zedong. Was second man in the country, in the power,
right.
to run the country. And so even him, they feel that the life is so unstable, and even if he says something, criticizes Mao, and he can be just stripped all the night. And then Mao also realized, and the country was just so unstable, and going like this, and sooner or later, the country will be getting into a civil war.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole country after that, running away, fled by Lin Biao, and Mao realized the country need to be calmed down a little bit, because the whole country was really on the brink of being collapsed, and economically, there was nobody working. Everybody was go straight and for the revolution, for the cultural revolution. So that was a time when Deng Xiaoping came back and said, we need to calm down, we need to do some work, we need to get back to work. And the people in the factory need to get back to work, the president need to get back to the farm to grow the rice, and the student need to go back to the classroom to study.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so he was really trying to reform in a sense. Okay. And one of the things he tried very hard, which a lot of us benefited tremendously, was he pretty much ordered Deng Xiaoping that the high school must reopen, teacher must go back to teaching, the student must go back to learning. Right? And before that point, the student beat the teachers.
Right.
Yeah. And he said, you can't do that anymore. And we were lucky that one of the high school, the one of the best high school in the whole province of Jiangxi province in the Nanhang city, the whole high school was moved to the this university,
mm-hmm.
because this is an agricultural university, it's outside the city. So they said that in the city, all the high school teachers, and you can't stay in the city, so they just moved them out, and they happened to be moved in our university. And that's the best high school, one of the best high school in Nanchang City, or maybe in the whole province. Okay. So along with the movement of the high school, all those teachers come down.
Mm-hmm.
The student left, they were sent to the countryside. But those high school teachers, the whole group of high school teachers, were now a part of the university. They don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Until nowadays, they say, well, we're going to reopen the high school, so you'll come back to teach.
Mm-hmm.
So I was so luckily, and being able to attend high school in that 2 years, and exposing and being taught by some of the best high school teacher for that 2 years. It's only a year and a half before Deng Xiaoping was stripped again by Mao.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Deng Xiaoping was stripped twice,
right.
And they come back three times. So that was the second time he came back to work and being stripped again. So that was luckily that 2 years, and all I learned for the high school for 6 years was pretty much constantly in that just a year and a half.
Right.
Yeah. And those are some very best high school teachers
mm-hmm.
that we ever had, and I still remember them. I still, whenever I get a chance and go back, I still go to visit them if ever possible.
Right.
They were good. They were good. Yeah.
But go ahead and talk about some of them if you would.
Yeah. Oh boy, they are good. They're good. I remember every one of them, and my math teacher, my chemistry teacher, my physics teachers, and my Chinese teachers, they are really good. For example, my math teachers, I love him so much. The guy, he likes us a lot. And
mm-hmm.
he was still single at the time. And they must feel so happy being able to teach again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we were fascinated. Then the classroom teaching is actually different from what we've been told in the last 3 years, well, not learning anything, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, and they were told that there's something called a real textbook. There's a whole book about the chemistry, a whole book about the physics, a whole book about the mathematics. Yeah, so everybody was so happy, and everybody was so so tired, so traumatized by this colleague 3 or 4 years before that hand. And mm-hmm. the teacher felt happy that they're not beaten by the student. They're actually teaching students.
Right.
And the world feel that they actually can learn something in the classroom. And that was a good day. That was a really good day. I remember that my math teacher was a very smart guy. And he was single, and he doesn't have a whole lot to do and during the weekend. And we would hang out with him even on the weekend. And that was fun. And I remember the way he teach, and he has like 3 classes every morning. You know, we have 3 classes in our grade. That was equivalent of 11th or 10th grade here.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't even bother to go to his office because there were 10 minutes between classes. He would just walk from one class to the next classroom, and then so just walking, just first sentence, he just they write a math formula on the board.
Right.
So we just start learning right away. Yeah, it always like that. And that was fun. Yeah, that was fun. And we spend the weekend with him, and it's not common to become someone a personal friend with your teacher. I don't think I can call him my personal friend. He was like much older than I am, and mm-hmm. was really good teacher. But I think that we have developed some kind of relationship even outside the classroom with my math teachers. And I remember my chemistry teachers, this big fellow, and he's got so much sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
And and the teaching chemistry was so easy for him. And all of a sudden, you learned so much from him. And I also remember my physics teachers, and it's a couple. Oh, they both are great. They can explain it's complicated the mathematics and in the physics in such an easy way.
Mm-hmm.
I also remember my Chinese teacher is an old man, and he's just about retirement, and his sight is very nearsighted, very very thick glass, and he taught the Chinese and in a very easy way for us to remember, and he really emphasized that what you learn in the classroom should not be separate and from your daily life. And
mm-hmm.
he will send out writing something, and they come back and they criticize and they comment our essay. And we are writing essay. For example, I remember reporting this sport event.
Right.
Okay, I remember. And he will say, when you describing people running very fast, don't you remember you just learned a few days ago in this an article we studied in the classroom describing how fast the things can happen and in the event in the sky, like in the thunderstorm. And so that's a good sentence. Why isn't anybody remember that, describing and how fast people can run?
Mm-hmm.
And he can come with a lot of examples like that and realize that you learned what he learned in the book. Is what you can use in the real life.
Right.
Yeah, those were some first class teachers, and we did not appreciate fully how good they were at the time. Only realized after they returned back to Nanchang City, to their old high school when they restored after 1976 or 1975. They realized those are the best teachers, and we were the last class they taught. Because after that, and when the country restored back and for the normal work, they were moving back to Nanchang City. They each, most of them become like, what they called, the director of central education for the subject.
Mm-hmm.
But in the whole city, there were like 10 or 20 different schools separated in the whole city district.
Right.
And that there's a central group that supervise individual schools for mathematics, for chemistry, for physics, and for Chinese, for the history like that.
Mm-hmm.
The teacher taught us, and they were the director for those supervisional directions.
Right.
Yeah, so they are really good teachers.
Yeah.
And, luckily or unfortunately, we only received 1 and 3 semesters of normal education, because after that, the country went back to chaotic again.
It did.
Because Deng Xiaoping was stripped. And his job in the, I think it was later 1973, and then the normal education in high school stopped again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but luckily I had 3 semesters. One of my early classmates from high school just came back to visit me, and he was a visiting scholar at Harvard right now,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't seen each other for 17 years.
So
come back, and we thinking back the early days, we were so lucky that we had that three semesters, and it means a lot to us.
Right.
Yeah. Compared to the, if you put in a context of those, well, 7 or 8 years of high school teaching, that's the only thing we learned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What was there any particular topic that you were very interested in, or was this all pretty interesting?
Oh boy, I was hungry. I love everything I learned, and mm-hmm. I don't remember anything I don't like. And I was not particularly good in the physics. I was very good in Chinese and in mathematics, in geographic, and chemistry as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not particularly good in the physics. And I remember we have the competition, Olympic competition for like Chinese, and I got a number 2, and we have the Olympic competition for math for the whole high school. I was number 3 or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
I was never able to compete for the physics. Yeah. And that was a good time.
Right.
Yeah, that was a good time. Yeah. Yeah, I just remembered, God, that we were so hungry and we didn't realize there's so much fun to learn it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's very much like you don't feel the food is good. After you've been starving for a couple of days, you think, man, the food is good. that's a very exact feeling I had.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember pretty clear those days.
So while you're at this school, are you staying in touch with your family? I mean, do you know where your sisters are, your father, mother?
Mm-hmm. They were still living in a Nanfu farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I was growing up, but I don't get to see them often at all, and I was only able to go home for the summer vacation and the winter vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And could not afford to go to see them and in the school town, because I would take a train. The ticket cost about, well, you can't use today's dollar number, right? It's probably $1 or less
mm-hmm.
to go home, but $1 means a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were very, very poor at the time.
Mm-hmm.
The money just enough to fit. There's no money left to buy anything, any book or anything. Yeah. So, but luckily, the teachers were great.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. When these teachers leave, though, what happens to you after that, after Deng Xiaoping?
Right. So I graduated from high school in 1974. Those teachers stayed with us until we graduate. And it is my class, and stay for one or 2 years. But after 1973, the country went back to chaotic again, and they couldn't do the normal teaching anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was just no examination and no real formal teaching anymore. So after 74, I was formally graduated from my high school, and I was 16 years old. So now I really have nowhere to go but go to the countryside.
Right.
And before that, in 1972, and Deng Xiaoping attempted to reopen the university and the college, and the workers in the factory and the president in the farm recommend the young man and the woman go to college. So you are admitted into college or university not by your score, not by your performance in the exam, instead of by the recommendation. And by the people that never received any education.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know anywhere else this have ever happened in the modern history of the whole world.
No, you're right. It's a reverse.
it can be more ridiculous than that, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm just I was just totally out of question, and for any possibility being recommended to go to colleges or universities because of my family,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And so that was just out of questions, like many other ones, and so I was. After graduating from high school in 74, I went to countryside. I worked in the countryside for 4 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I was 16 years old. It was not so bad. I grew up a little bit than 3 years ago. So at least now I can go to work
mm-hmm.
and in the field. Yeah.
So what did you do for those 4 years?
Oh, God. All kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
I grew up rice and drawing buffalo and in the field. I work in the what do they call this? The fruit farm.
Mm-hmm.
Grow up like peaches, peaches, and all those kind of farm works.
Right.
I did a number of things, and I also taught 2.5 years in the middle school. I used to working on. I used to study myself.
That's where your sister.
Right. That's the time actually I taught my sister.
Mm-hmm.
They were just getting into the elementary school, and there was no formal educational college available to anybody. And so high school graduate teaching high school is pretty common.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was asked to teach for 2.5 years at elementary school. Yeah. So I did all kinds of stuff.
You know, did you split your time between the farming and the teaching, or did you?
No, I did a year and a half in the farm, and then I was asking to go to teaching. After one semester, they said, okay, you're done, and they go back to farming. after several months, they said, okay, we need some people help, and I went back again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I totally probably spent a year and a half in the 4 years in the field, and about 2 years, 2.5 years in the school
right.
to teach. And I taught everything. I taught the Chinese, I taught the physics. And I even taught the physical PE or physical exercise. And believe it or not, I even taught English.
All right.
I did taught English.
Mm. How good was your English at that point?
Oh, boy. That was a very funny way I taught English. And I didn't even know how to read English myself. How can I teach? But at least I know there's something called English. No one else even knew it.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. How did you like teaching?
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And the kids love me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very energetic. And I love teaching, and I had a very close relationship and with the student, and some even older than I am, and that was the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the teaching, and I was a very good teacher actually, and I heard a lot from the parents of the teachers, and the one thing I remember the most is that this guy meets me, and so badly he comes from such bad families, otherwise he'd be great teachers,
mm-hmm.
and the teachers love him.
Right.
Yeah, and then those kids, the students, they do love my lectures.
Right.
Yeah. And we taught a lot, and I was one of the best teachers in the school at the time.
Hmm. So what did you love?
I enjoyed a lot.
What did you love specifically about teaching?
I taught physics, I taught Chinese, and that's the two main classes I've been teaching. Yeah, I did a little bit on the math, but mainly on Chinese and physics.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching them. And I think that my lecture was energetic, and I tried to do as good as I could. And those days, teaching was not difficult if you actually know something.
Yeah.
Because compared with other teachers in the same office, and a lot of them that didn't even receive some medications that I did,
mm-hmm.
and not mention I was a pretty good student. And so at least I know the content. And a lot of them, those teachers, they don't even understand what they were teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not they can do a good teaching is not even questionable.
Yeah.
Yeah, so at least I know the stuff, and I know myself whether I can communicate to the student, and so I can try it. But for some of them, they can even not try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all they can do is just pretty much just read the book. Yeah. So I think that's one of the reasons students why they like my lectures
yeah.
so much. Yeah.
It sounded like you had good models too. Those teachers that you had earlier, maybe.
I didn't really follow them. I don't think I could because they had much more education than I had.
Right.
But they influenced me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if not for that 3 semesters education I got from them, it would not be possible to
yeah.
teach myself. Yeah. And the one consistent and striking the feeling I had during that 4 years from 74 to 78 when I was able to go to college, that 4 years, one thing I do remember clearly was I was so hungry for anything I can grab,
mm-hmm.
books, and I just can't get enough to read. I was really starved.
Yeah.
That time the living was getting back to normal, and the stomach was not hungry anymore,
mm-hmm.
and we can feed ourselves. The life and the stuff and the coming down was not so chaotic as early 70s, and so country will try to get it back to normal. And so people have a relatively normal life, so to speak. And but one thing we really don't have is I just so hungry of learning.
Yeah.
That there was no chance, no opportunity, because the university was closed, the library was shut down. There was just no book, no one I can talk to,
mm-hmm.
I can learn. And I was not very close with my father. He could teach me something. I don't know, he was just totally beaten down or just no mood, was so afraid to teach me anything that could have caused him trouble or me trouble later on.
Yeah.
And so I did not learn anything from my father, and, from the textbook-wise. Yeah. And so one thing I did, that helps me a lot, was I was able to bribe one of my high school teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So her job was to walking to make the library that was shut down, just clean up and they just watch it. They do nothing and they just shut down.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. The whole library just shut down. It's a big library actually. There are all kinds of books,
mm-hmm.
and they just collect from anywhere and they just locked in that room. So he was the one just supposed to clean them up. And I was the library was full because it was not. Nobody was allowed to go in there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that's her job. And so I was able to bribe her. To bribe her, saying, "Well, please just let me in, and I bring something to her. We try to make a friend with her." And she actually allowed me to go in and with a bag.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a half a bottle, half a steel. I was able to grab the whole the bag of book
right.
and take it home. You would not imagine what I was reading. And I was reading anything I could grab.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not by choice. It's by what I can get with.
Yeah.
I was not reading much about the physics or chemistry, anything like that, because that's something you cannot really teach yourself. Without any teachers, I can't find anybody to read. I was reading a lot of Chinese books,
mm-hmm.
like Chinese literatures or histories or poems. I was reading the world history books. I read a couple of pretty good world history books.
Mm-hmm.
And I was even reading like the economic books. Mm-hmm. I have no idea what I was reading. I just read whatever I can grab with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it made difference because no one else was reading or studying at all. And after graduating from high school, none of my classmates were studying. And at least I was still studying, I was still reading. So that made me somewhat different from the rest of my classmates. And the worst part in the 4 years, me and everybody else, was hopeless.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, so all you're feeling is now your education is over, you work there, you find a girl, get married, have kids, and just like the rest of farmer,
mm-hmm.
there's no any. You're not allowed to go anywhere looking for a job. There's no university. You can't go any educations.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing happening in the whole farm. So you're just thinking about it. You just will be just like one of them. So first year, and when I come inside, I still feel somewhat fresh and out of a classroom. But I remember very clearly, in the last couple of years, and especially 73 or 74, it's totally hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
I start growing up, it's getting the age like 17 or 18 or 20, and you're starting and finding girls, and they just feel that's your life,
mm-hmm.
that's about it. And
right.
there's no, and even though, and then you are reading a book, but you are not, you don't have any dream that you can possibly go anywhere for any further education. That time I knew there was a place called a university or college, and you knew that, and if you were born in a good family, you might have a chance to be recommended to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some place called the college, but that's not my dream. I could not go it. And the hopeless was really a realistic feeling. And for the last couple of years when I was in the countryside, and it's a very pessimistic.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing. It's not physically how hard. I mean, I was growing up, I could work. And I was doing pretty well in the classroom, and the student liked me. But I just feel that my career or my growth is about it, and
mm-hmm.
I want to spend the rest of my life in the farm.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I can't go anywhere, and I can't possibly get any education. Yeah.
And then, as you know, a great year, I mean an important year, 1976, is when Zhou Enlai dies first, and then Mao Zedong dies.
Yeah, I remember that year very clearly from the January Zhou Enlai first died. We were very sad about this one, because I don't know how we got this impression from where, but we had a very good impression about him. We know very distantly what he was look like and
mm-hmm.
what he was doing. But he did give the ordinary people an impression that he was the one practical, running the country, doing the business, whereas Mao and it's like a god. At the time, we could not possibly think that Mao was a bad person or anything like that. But
mm-hmm.
Mao does represent a revolution. But Zhou and does represent a normal life.
Yeah.
And so people start feel that normal life is what they wanted. Yeah. And so he died, and a few months later, Deng Xiaoping was stripped again, and they just kicked out the party and the government. You just feel the whole country is just about starting another revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not have a real feeling about what could happen, but you can feel that this chaotic is about to happen again. It's about to happen again. And the people become like used to it, and every few years, and there's a chaotic movement, political movement, so to speak, from early 50s. From early days, like my father was labeled as anti-revolutionary or rightist. And every few years, something like that happened. You just feel, well, this was another cycle.
Yeah.
And then whether you like it, you just almost like getting used to it. Yeah, and it's just like it can happen again. Yeah. And of course, come to September when Mao died. That was a big shock.
Yeah.
And we could not understand and appreciate the impact at the time. But that probably is more important than anything else for the country and for myself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we could not grab the implications in the first few months. And the frozen period is becoming melted until sometimes early 77.
Yeah.
We didn't feel anything at the beginning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we move on, I just want to... in 72, it was a big news story that Nixon went to China and sort of, you know, opening to the East. I mean, were you aware? I mean, you're fairly young, though. You're 14, 15. Did that make any impact at you at all?
It did, actually, because I was very into the world politics, even when I was young. I liked it.
I was never
really into it, but I like it. And I listened to the radio, and I'm fully aware of those stuff. But, of course, and all I knew was from what the radio broadcast. But the very fact that the American president come to visit China is already big enough to thinking, well, they cannot be everybody's monster in the United States.
He has two legs and two arms.
Yeah, so that's pretty clear. And that was in the middle of the period, and the country tried to get it back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't remember any very bad feeling towards an American president at the time, even though what we heard is very limited and they're very restrictive.
Right.
But clearly, we were not thinking American people or an American president as some kind of monster. It's a better person, and they still represent the capitalism.
Yeah.
But it's not like the monsters impression I had when I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But practically, and the only impact that had to me or the people like me at that kind of level was that we realized there's another world out there.
Yeah.
And but we were not importing anything. We were never getting to see any American product, anything like that. But we did start to have an impression that outside the world, they are more advanced technologically and life-wise. And we started hearing the word like the television and the air conditioning. We started hearing those words, mm-hmm. even though we didn't know exactly what it was.
Right.
But everything was still, the whole media was controlled by the government. And there's nothing, and you can, there's no channel, and you can get any news by yourself. Listen to like American broadcast, it's completely illegal. So that itself can get you into prison.
Mm-hmm.
And even though if you have a short wave radio, you could receive it, but that's illegal.
Yeah.
That's illegal, right? Yeah. So that's the way to catalyze that one is probably less chaotic, and the people try to get to normal, but it's very, very still isolated. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there was no direct impact by the opening to the Western the time, but we start to feel there's another outside world out there.
Right.
Because not only Nixon and several other and the leaders from Western countries followed up and to visit China's.
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, wow, there is another world outside. That's all the feel I can remember it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. You say that in 77, after Mao's death, there's sort of a thawing. How did you, I mean, what were signs of that thawing for you?
The first actually was not a feeling of a sore. The first was pretty scary. And my father, I remember, he was pretty scary. He thought this was just another political movement is going to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to be really careful, shut your mouth, not to say anything, because when every political movement is coming, and the people like him will be the first target to hit. Okay, so anything he say or I say can cause him trouble again. So first of 7 months, we were pretty actually scary at that point. He didn't say anything, right? You just feel unrealistic. The market actually is a normal human being, he also can die.
Yeah.
And it's not like a God that will live forever. Because that's what we're chanting for years. It's long live Chairman Mao, long live Chairman Mao. And you never believe that he actually died, right? But then, the first 7 months, nothing really happened. The country tried to be calm. This, if you think back, what was the first sign of a story is that there was no actual political movement.
Right, that was the sign.
Yeah, that was the sign. Now let's expect that something big is happening again. It was not. Nothing
right.
was happening. And then we also know that time, and even for the ordinary people like me, that if we could have people like Deng Xiaoping come back to power, that's good for us.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a rumor starting around that he might coming back. The fact that the rumor can spreading around, which means people can privately talk about the rumor, it's already a big sign.
Yeah.
Because before that point, people can say nobody is there to say anything along those lines. But people start spreading rumor that people like Deng Xiaoping might coming back to the power, along with a lot of those old leaderships and they're coming back. Mm-hmm. That was viewed as a sign of and the country might come back to normal. But of course, the big things happened. The deep big things happened. The event after Mao's death was the arrest of his wife.
Right.
And even we knew that those group of people, like represented by his wife, are the ones really revolutionary. They're not caring much about the normal life, or not about the normal work, not and working for to restore the classroom teaching or factory work, anything like that. They were really just behind one political movement after another. So we know that's what they're for. So the fact that they're being arrested, that make you feel, wow, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. So that's, if the realistic, the first one, that's with the arrest. Yeah. And of course, the next, the big thing that happened to me was hearing this rumor in the summer of 1977 that university might reopen again. And this time, the student get in not by recommendation, instead by testing. That was like I don't know how to describe that, and it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
that could happen, and the people starting spreading rumor in the summer of 77. That could happen, and I didn't hear the rumor until September of 1977. That actually could happen, and everybody is allowed to take part in the exam, mm-hmm. including people like me.
Yeah, that is amazing.
And among the classmates, we start talking about that one. And finally, I think it was either October or November, I don't know what time, and we were told that could happen. We could register to take a part of the exam. That would be held very soon, and I don't know what time. We start grabbing around what will be tested.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like the 10 years. There was no real classroom teaching for any high school student, except that 3 semesters I was mentioning. And we don't even know what this college entrance exam supposed to be.
Right.
And no one has any idea.
So you got to reinvent it all again.
Yeah, and we had no idea what will be tested. And we just try to remember what we learned. And that's the time and the 3 good semesters of the classroom teaching I had in 72 and 73.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only thing I remembered. And I think the national exam was held, I forgot what day, I think it was in November or something, and then nobody had prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
We just thought we were allowed. So we have no idea what we are anticipating and what would come out. But that was like a big sense in that whole year. And I forgot what's the number, but I remember, and the final statistic says that the 1 in 100 had a chance of going to be accepted.
1 out of 100?
Yeah.
Wow.
1% of people participating in the exam can be accepted. So mm-hmm. that's a ratio between how many people take exam and how many people can be accepted. So the standard joke was like half people in this room can go to university, because each classroom of examination holding about 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
So when we walk in that room for exam, that's the joke we have. So only half people in this room can go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that in itself was already big enough to shock everybody that you go to college by taking exam, not by taking recommendation.
Yeah.
Right. And that had a huge impact for every one of us, even though the first exam I took in 1977, and had no idea how to prepare. We didn't even know what to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
And we advertised with classroom with our teachers and for 2 or 3 years. So we just grabbed teachers. And amazingly enough, I did pretty damn well.
Mm-hmm.
I did. But next thing comes with a shock. So I passed the exam. My score's good enough, but I was stripped not a long ago.
Really?
Yeah, because of my father.
Oh, my God.
That was one of the worst times I had, and in my life and in my, probably my parents as well. Because you just see this hope, finally, after all these years. You actually did pretty well, and you feel that you might have the real life now. Boom, it's being stripped out.
Right.
Yeah. So that was very devastating, and I remember that whole winter of early 78, and so we just waiting and waiting to get the notification would have been accepted, and the post office was shut down. So my father and my mother, they walk about several miles in the cold winter, go to another place to pick up the mail,
mm-hmm.
to see when I can get these notifications. But the hope starts slim and just slip away, and day by day. Because and every day you hear somebody's being admitted to university, and somebody being admitted, and I was not receiving anything. And the worst or the most encouraging time come with a rumor that there were a group of people actually come to our university, the Jiangxi Agricultural University, to look at my material or my paperwork, which means and they're getting so close, so they turn it down.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason is because my father was still rightist. Or anti-revolutionary.
So how did you find out that was the reason?
The first rumor I heard is somebody come to what they call it. Each university send 2 or 3 people to individual province to look in the exam score, and then they look in the paperwork.
Oh, I see.
Okay, and at that time the score was not enough. They were looking the paperwork. The paperwork means and your family history.
Yeah.
And so my paperwork was and asked by and. University in Lanjin, I heard, and the rumor was I did pretty well. I never know my final score though, first year.
Mm-hmm.
That was new to everybody. The management was not so efficient. They never told every student what score you have, but I heard that my score was pretty good, and that this university I applied was a very good university, very prestigious one. They looked at my paperwork, assuming my score probably was good enough, but they never sent out an admission letter.
Hmm.
And the only reason later on we find out is the long the paperwork, we found that my father was still anti-revolutionary, so they turned down my applications.
Right.
And that was a pretty bad time. And my father felt so bad, and he just felt that just because of him and just killed my career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I couldn't bear it to go home. I remember those days, and every time we have the lunch or dinner, there was nobody talking.
Yeah.
And the devastating was nobody talking. I was so angry. And he just had your hope lifted, and then just been vanished.
The doors closed again.
Yeah, shut you off like that.
And you didn't know whether it was ever going to be opened. That's the trouble.
Well, I know the university will be reopened, but I can't change the history of my father. So
right.
I probably will never get a chance to go there, if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the newspaper was saying that the policy is only based on your score, not your family. But that's not what's happening in reality.
Yeah.
So I get so angry, so I wrote a letter to Deng Xiaoping myself.
Hmm.
And he actually got the letter. And I didn't find out later because they have this national education meeting, and the president of our university actually went to the meeting. And when he was at the meeting, and somebody from Deng Xiaoping's office come to say, who is the representative from this Jiangxi Agricultural University? The president, I am, he said, and the unit guy, Yue Xiong, and he said, yeah, I know him pretty well, actually, because he was a long-term friend with my parents. They know each other for quite a long time, since the early days my father was sent to the farm.
Right.
Yeah. He said, what's happening? He said, can you pass the notes to him that and his letter was received by in our office, Mr. Deng Xiaoping's office, and please tell him that he's not alone.
Wow,
and
that's amazing.
Yeah, he's not alone, and we will and address this issue nationwide,
right.
Because there are a lot of people like me.
Right.
I was not alone. And he said, we're going to change the policy, really implement this policy that the kids can only be admitted to the university and solely by the testing, not influenced by the association with their family.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But the chance was already passed for the 77.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Before we go on, let me turn that on again.